You're listening to
Sci-Fi Dig. Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Sci-Fi Dig Show 321. I am your host, Aaron Makem. This week, I'm going to discuss the Fringe episode in which we meet Mr. Jones, which is not a huge episode, but a huge episode as far as the overall story is concerned of season one. I'm also going to discuss a couple of television shows I'm currently watching, and of course, as always, new DVD releases, because we all need new stuff to watch, right? Right. Anyway, with that being said, let's just jump right into new DVD releases. These are going to be for February 12th, and there is not a whole lot of science fiction coming up, but there are a couple of movies that might interest those folks out there that are kind of science fiction. We have The Man with the Iron Fist, which is comes as a two-disc combo pack, Blu-ray and DVD plus digital copy. And it only gets like 2.5 stars, but it looks like it might be visually appealing. We are also going to get Jedi Junkies from 2010, which is a Star Wars documentary about the most hardcore Star Wars fans. I haven't seen this yet, but I would like to investigate it. Now, sometimes with these fan films, I know some people get upset because it paints the fans in a bad light. But the thing is fans, I enjoy watching these. I know that not everybody's this hardcore. I know that, these people might be a little different than us. They might, I remember the original Trekkies, and everybody made a big deal about the one lady that just wore her Star Trek uniform all the time. My thing is she wasn't hurting anybody. Yeah, a little weird, but, not that big of a deal. She wasn't hurting anybody. She wasn't causing anybody pain or suffering or anything. She wasn't breaking the law, so why not just let her be? She's doing what makes her happy. Who cares? We're also going to get Jay and Silent Bob Get Irish, The Swearing of the Green, which is their live comedy show. They did two sold out nights in, I'm not exactly sure if they have the city listed here. There's not any reviews for this yet. The Vicar Street Theater in Dublin. And, I might be checking that out at some point in time, but not at the top of my list. You're going to get Weeds Season 8. I didn't realize that was still around. Not necessarily science fiction, but I do enjoy the thing about Weeds that I like is that it has been a staple on Netflix, or it was for quite some time, and I really like the fact that we're able to watch it that way. That seems to be about all that there is. There seems to be a couple of cheesy science fiction films out there, and, I'm not even going to list them, but there's a whole lot. I mean, we have like aliens and UFOs. We have Apocalypse Final Countdown. We have Bigfoot's Wild Weekend, Croczilla, all these little things that keep popping up. And I'm not exactly sure why it's such a, it's kind of a crappy week for all the things out, for all the different sci-fi genre type films. There's just not a whole lot here. And then next week we're going to get hammered. One of the big things that comes out next week, for those of you that haven't pre-ordered yet, is Game of Thrones Season 2. I haven't pre-ordered mine yet, but when I get done recording this, I'm going to do that because I completely forgot about it coming out. So I want to check that out. If you live in the UK for February 18th, you're going to get Skyfall. You're going to get... Wow, you don't have a whole lot coming out either. Hey, you get Doctor Who, though, the Ark in Space special edition DVD, so you can never have too much of that. You're going to get Ripper Street, not sure what that is. I know I've seen it advertised here and there, but I haven't investigated. You're going to get the Serenity Steelbook Universal 100th Anniversary Edition for £13. That'll be available, and I know a few people out there have a half a gazillion versions of Serenity, and this might be one other one to pick up. I see that the steelbooks are a big thing in the UK, but they are not really pushed over here as often. As a matter of fact, friends of mine who I know that get DVDs and happen to get a steelbook get real excited over the fact that it's unique, and you don't normally, you can normally not find those around here, and so they get pretty excited about it. You're going to get... you have a couple other steelbooks. I have to mention this one, not science fiction, but a great movie, Hot Fuzz. The steelbook edition is going to be available as well. The version of Hot Fuzz I have is actually a flipper disc. It's a DVD on one side and HD DVD on the other. Once HD DVD took a dive, I was able to pick up a few DVDs for $5 that were flippers like that, and I didn't have the movie, but I wanted it, and so I picked it up. iRobot in 3D is going to be available to you, as well as the Transformers Prime series, and that seems to be about it. I don't see a lot of there's a Dune Apocalypse. I'm not quite sure what that is. Oh, I'm sorry. That's available for pre-order on that date, which, no, that's available. It'll be available on the 18th. I'm not exactly sure what this is. I'm going to have to investigate this further. It looks as though it has a lenticular cover, and wow. I'm not exactly sure what this is. But it's only on regular DVD, it looks like. And it's definitely part of the Dune series, and it looks like it could possibly be animated. No, the cover makes it look like it's animated. This is actually the Children of Dune with a new name and a fresh release, it looks like. Anyway, that's what we have coming up that way. There's a couple, coming up that week, and there's a couple of things I want to talk about before I jump into the Fringe episode. And one of those things is I was a huge fan of Spartacus: Blood and Sand. The first episode, is I think it's an hour and a half long. I think the first episode was an hour and a half long. Anyway, it starts like a lot of science fiction that we're familiar with, or fantasy, or that genre type. I use science fiction as a generic term, and I probably shouldn't. I know some people get uptight about that, but that's just how I roll. Anyway, when I first saw it, I was watching it via Netflix, because Stars and Netflix had a deal. And then that deal fell through, but not before the entire first season. I think the entire first season made on Netflix. Unfortunately, I had no other way of watching Netflix other than on my computer, so I tried to keep up. I watched a couple of the episodes, and I really enjoyed it, but I kind of fell behind because I couldn't find time to sit down with my computer in order to watch it. Eventually, somebody gifted me the first season, and I sat down and I burned through it, and I loved it. I couldn't wait for the next one. Well, the main star got cancer. There was a lot of issues involved there. They ended up doing a miniseries called Gods of the Arena. I watched the first couple of episodes of that, and although I enjoyed it, I really wanted to see what happened to these characters. I didn't care what had happened to, I can't say I didn't care, but to me, it's Spartacus and what he's able to do with the other gladiators that I enjoy. And I enjoy all the politics behind these people and what drives them, because you have people that are slaves and they try to please the Dominar, and I don't know what they hope to gain by that, because they're always going to be slaves. Anyhow, at some point in time, I'll go back and finish watching Gods of the Arena, but not today. Anyway, during Christmas time, the second season became available, Vengeance, and it was $20 at Target. I didn't believe it, so I actually went and scanned it, and even though I shouldn't have been shopping for myself, I ended up picking it up because the price was too good, and I just recently started watching that, and again, I'm sucked right back into it. This show is overly gory. It's very stylized. There is probably an average of 50 boobs an episode. There's a lot of nudity, a lot of sex and things like that. And that turns some people off, and they just kind of turn away thinking it's trashy or whatever, without paying attention to the series. And that's what kind of gets under my skin, because if you give it time, you realize it's all about the politics. And that is what really sells the series for me. Now, I was quite excited by the time I got to episode 4 or 5, how good the characters had been written, and characters who were kind of in the background came to the forefront. Characters that we hadn't seen, made new appearances, characters that we thought were, not that they disappeared, but they were just kind of in a position of not being on the screen very often, very much are at the forefront now, and they've done it very organically. The reason I'm talking about this series is that if you haven't taken the time to watch Spartacus, I'm not a family-friendly series. This is definitely for adults only. If you haven't taken time to watch this, I highly, highly recommend that you do. Just so well done. And the fight scenes, the action are all fantastic. The makeup is out of this world. The way that they do makeup, not only on the gore parts, but on the wounds. Like, somebody will get a scratch in their face, and then the next day, that'll be a little bit swollen. They take the time to pay attention to those details, and that's what really makes the series work on a visual level. And of course, the fight scenes and the way that they mat those and they blow out the colors on those, it's really well done. I highly recommend it. Anyway, that's one of the things I'm watching this. Well, hopefully over the next week I'll finish it, but really enjoying it. Can't wait till the next one. Don't have Stars. Going to have to wait for the DVDs on that. I've also been watching The Following, which is about a cult. I talked a bit about this. I don't want to give too much away. I'm about 3 episodes in. I'm not sure if I'm going to stay with this or not. Although I enjoy the show, the third episode that I watched, this is kind of spoilery, so you might want to skip ahead a little bit, but it just seemed that there was too many people involved with the cult. It's just like it was spanning everywhere, and it kind of made it was hard for me to buy that the cult had reached this far and was, you know, too many people were involved with it. It just, I don't know, I had trouble believing it. You know, I just couldn't believe that, you know, that it seemed too convenient for the storytelling. But I'm enjoying the story. I'm enjoying some of the characters. I wish that they would give Kevin Bacon more to do. You know, although I enjoy his acting and I enjoy his character, it just seems like he just kind of walks around depressed all the time, and it doesn't really do much. I wish that there was more things for him to do. The final thing before I jump into the Fringe here is, you know, I talked to last week about watching The Dark Knight Returns Part 2 and the fact that they had, you know, a little bit of a feature on the next DC animated film, which was Superman Unbound, and the fact that, you know, every time that they do this, they usually show you the source material where this all came from, right? The comics. Now, those of you that are, you know, read comics understand that when you have a big story, it spans multiple titles, okay? So, like, Superman might have 3 titles, so it'll span those 3 titles, maybe for a couple issues each. And, you know, it'll have on the front part whatever of you know, part 2 of 6 or whatever, and you'll know what's what. And so I thought, well, I'm going to go to Comixology, and surely they have some sort of Superman stuff where they have these kind of broken down into stories, and you can just buy it, you know, like a digital trade, right? Only, you know, you're getting more than one title. You're not buying 6 issues of Action Comics. You're getting like 2 Action, 2 Adventures of Superman, 2 Superman, whatever, you know. But they have it broken down. Well, when I went on there, of course, it didn't have that. And although I have some of these issues, I didn't feel like digging them out. And I'm really, when it comes to comics, I'm really all digital. You know, I buy trades and I'll buy hardcovers, but I haven't been buying monthly comics. Every now and then, if we're out somewhere and I have the opportunity, I might pick one up that I know might be a one-off or something like that. But for the most part, I'm buying digital, trying to keep the clutter down. And I like having everything on one device. And I have multiple digital devices at this point in my life. And I like to be able to read, you know, pick it up and read whatever. Well, they didn't have that. And I was like, well, you know, I don't understand why they should have the entire, every Superman story should be digital at this point. I mean, come on, you know, we've been doing this for years. I'm not sure what the holdup is. But sure enough, if you're interested in that, you can go to, one of the variety of torrent sites and find a complete entire run, like multiple broken down to multiple parts of all these stories. And it just kind of got under my skin because, you know, isn't the idea of the digital to make it easier? I understand. I mean, because you're paying a premium price, but isn't it supposed to make it easier? And I'm trying to do something legit and I don't have that opportunity. And I just don't understand I understand it takes time to scan these. I do understand that, but come on, man. I mean, you know, there's these big stories. Let's get them all together. And that's, you know, again, it's part of the reason that, that I do like digital, and I do purchase when they're on sale. But it seems like every time I want to go, and I say, okay, I'm gonna go ahead and break my rule of paying more than 99 cents for the mainstream comics. I'll pay more for the independents. Independents, I'll pay a couple bucks. But I thought, you know, I'm gonna go, and if it's a couple bucks each, I'm just gonna go ahead and buy it because I want to reread it before this comes out. And I really did enjoy the storyline that they had, and you know, couldn't find. I want it to be easy. Okay, I don't want to look around. I don't want to have to go and find the individual issues. I want to be able to go on there and say, this is this story, okay? And this is this story, and this is this story. And yeah, it follows multiple issues. Like when the current Death in the Family storyline is done, that DC's currently running, I want to be able to go on and buy them, have them put in order, and pay. I'll pay a premium to get them all together and just be able to read one after the other and read it that way. And if I can't do that, then as far as I'm concerned, they've kind of failed, because there's no reason to not have that digital file set up like that so we can grab it and do what we want. It's all about ease. And if I got to work for it and I got to look around, I got to buy individual images and I got to do research to find out what's connected where and what parts what, then I don't want to, I'm not interested in doing that. You know, I'm just not. I mean, to be honest with you, I could go online and find a torrent that has it all done for me. And that's what I'm saying. I mean, when you make the piracy easier than the real thing, then you're kind of failing at your form there. You know, at your, my whole thing is Comixology Easy. It's on my, all my devices. I go there, I click, I pick up another device and I'm like, okay, I already bought these. So I just download them and they're on my device. You know, it's just not, it's, the ease of use is not quite there yet. We need to work on that a little bit. But anyway, I just wanted to comment on that. I know some people might have some thoughts on that or whatever, but, I still enjoy Comixology and the other comic apps out there. I still enjoy, you know, finding great stuff on sale. I still enjoy finding the independent stuff out there. I wish it was all in one app, but it's not. And that kind of makes it a pain in the ass. I know that Comixology has seems to have a pretty big hold as far as, you know, the different companies. Dark Horse has their own app. And then when I go there and I think about reading Hellboy, I don't find it in Comixology or, you know, then I'm like, well, you know, it's kind of a pain in the ass that I have to have two different apps, you know, to do this. I want to just have it all under one roof and not have to worry about it. And I wish somebody would devise an app like that where you can go and then, you know, it have all the comics and then you can, you know, it'll just say, okay, this one's here in this app or whatever. Just bring me a screen that has all the apps and where they're at. And I want to make one purchase and not have to worry about it. Something to make to combine everything and make it a little bit easier would be great. Anyway, maybe sometime in the future. Anyway, I'm going to talk about Fringe now. This week's episode is entitled In Which We Meet Mr. Jones. This is episode 7 of season 1. It originally aired on November 11th, 2008. Basically, the overview here of the story is that an agent, FBI agent who is friends with Agent Broyles is giving him, you know, going over some information with him when he suddenly has chest pains and is having all kind of discomfort and passes out, collapses in his office. And they get him to the hospital. His wife arrives and they are getting ready to figure out what's going on. His heart stops and so they decide they need to go in. So they crack open his chest and when they do, they find Seymour from, no, it's not really Seymour, but they find a big giant parasite thing that's got teeth like Seymour wrapped around the guy's heart. And that's kind of where we come in at. The first audio clip is of the group showing up at the hospital. Agent Broyles is trying to give, he's going to explain eventually what happened, but he doesn't do a very good job of it.
It happened in my office 2 hours ago. It wasn't a heart attack, at least not in the traditional sense. They've cordoned off the area, but ID's been here already, so the thing isn't communicable.
The thing?
We'll get to that.
Do you have any gum?
No, Walter.
Mint?
No, later.
Agent Loeb returned from an operation last week in Frankfurt. Do you know him at all?
No.
He collapsed. Thought it was a seizure at first, except he appeared lucid and pain. Didn't seem like a heart attack either. None of us knew what it was, and none of us know now either.
How are his vital signs?
Weakening. Dr. Bishop, what you're about to see, I don't know if you've seen anything like it before, but I'm hoping you have. I'm hoping you can help. The man lying in that room is not just a colleague. He's a friend.
I see. Do you have any mints?
Now, of course, you know that you have the humor of that clip where Walter is asking about gum and mints and what have you, and that kind of continues through his examination of the agent and of whatever it is that's wrapped around his heart. He gets the guy moved to the lab, and then Walter has a few ideas of, or he's trying to put together some ideas of how something like this could have happened.
I was deconstructing in my head the approach to designing something like this, and two things occurred to me on the journey from the hospital. One, we could be dealing with something as simple as Giardia duodenalis.
As simple as that? Really?
It's a single-celled parasite that lives in the intestines of animals. Common waterborne illness.
Could we attach Mr.
Loeb?
Loeb to the vitals machine, please.
So you're saying that thing in his chest...
is a parasite? Yes. Yes, perhaps. But with an exceptional means of attachment. Typically, parasites use whole body insertion. This creature is unlike anything I've seen before, so we won't be able to truly examine it until it's removed.
Mitchell Loeb's recent case files as requested.
Oh, thanks, Astrid.
And his wife just arrived. She has to speak with you.
I'm going to talk to her in the office.
Okay, he's wired. What was the other thing?
Pardon?
You said the two things occurred to you. What's the other one?
Oh. I would still really like some gum or some mints. Thank you, Peter.
And of course, you know, Peter has gum in his pocket when he asks, and he pulls it out as soon as he says something, you know, showing once again, you know, the Walter and Peter relationship and how he is able to, you know, not really... have a preconceived notion of what he wants, but have a preconceived notion that he has like these childlike episodes, you know, where he gets fixated on something. And we're going to have more of that this episode. And I really enjoy how that plays out, how we delve a little bit deeper into the relationship.
Mrs. Loeb? Olivia Dunham. I'm with Homeland Security.
Samantha. I'm hoping you can help me. No one will tell me anything.
Why was he transferred here? Can you at least tell me that? I can tell you that there's a doctor here who is uniquely qualified to save your husband's life.
This was in his bag, among the things he brought back from Frankfurt. I don't know if it'll help at all.
It might. We'll check it out. Thank you.
Can I see Mitchell? Please.
As soon as possible. I promise you that.
Now, during the course of their examination and what they're trying to figure out with Agent Loeb, they trigger something, and they end up having to give him or Peter gives him an injection that relaxes him and basically saves his life. And I just have a real quick sound clip when this happens, because what they're trying to do, they're trying to get a sample of whatever it is that's wrapped around his heart and throughout his body. And they're trying to figure out, you know, they're trying to figure out what it is, and they have to get a sample, DNA sample, to do that. And so as soon as Walter gets a DNA sample, you know, his plan is, you know, you can keep in mind he's purely a scientist. So he wants to go and analyze this. He's going to analyze this when this happens. And then he's halfway across the room when Peter jumps into action and saves the guy's life.
Excellent work, son. You may have found your true calling at last. Working with me?
I certainly hope not.
Now, the next audio clip I have is kind of a long one. I need to apologize, too, for my voice. I'm not sure what exactly is going on. We've had a major weather change here. It's gotten incredibly warm, and as soon as it does, I don't have any sinus drains or anything. I have no idea what's going on. I feel fine, but it sounds like I just ate some gravel. I don't know what's going on. The next clip I have is a really long clip, and it kind of explains It explains quite a bit, and you're just going to have to go with it. But before I get that far, I want to tell you what the glyphs for this episode say. They say codes, and that will play out in the next clip here. You'll understand exactly what they're talking about there. And there was a couple of songs on here. Thank You To by My Morning Jacket and Let It Be Me by Ray LaMontagne. I don't know how to say his last name. I just butchered it. But every now and then we get some real, some songs that you can find elsewhere other than, originally crafted for the Fringe show. And it doesn't happen too often, but when it does, I want to point it out because I know that if you're like me, when you watch a show and you hear a song, the first thing I'm doing is going online to figure out what song and who sang it, if it's something I really like, so I can hunt it down and get a copy of it, Anyway, here is the long clip where a great deal of information is imparted on us.
I studied cryptology even before I joined the Bureau. I was obsessed as a kid. Now, I keep assuming it can't be this, that it's too simple to be plain text, but I think it may just be the Caesar shift.
What's that?
It's a simple monoalphabetic cipher.
Is it now?
It's what Julius Caesar used, apparently, to send letters to his friends. You take one letter and replace it with another, but in alphabetical order.
There's a sequence of three letters that appears repeatedly in the parasite's DNA. It could be C-I-W, or D-J-X, or E-K-Y.
Or Z-F-T.
Yeah, Z-F-T fits. What is that?
I've been reviewing John Scott's cases, checking to see if any of them were mishandled, or seeing if any of the cases were left unsolved.
And?
And one of them that I remember was an operation tracking a group working out of Budapest. The name on the file, what was written, was ZFT. That means something to you? What?
A month ago, a man, British national named David Robert Jones, was arrested in Frankfurt, Germany by Interpol in possession of state secrets. His background is in deep biotechnology, notably genetic weaponry. He's a senior fellow at the Bremen Institute for 12 years, then went off the grid. He'd show up now and then, often in Eastern Europe.
So you think he's EFT?
I don't know. But Loeb did. It was one of the reasons he was in Frankfurt, investigating Jones.
Meaning that thing?
Maybe retribution.
So ZFT, what is it? Who are they?
Agent Dunham, there is much you have not been made aware of regarding the pattern.
Well, I'm here. I have time. Are you available?
What we've learned so far is the following. There are cells, we don't know how many, privately funded with presence in 83 recorded countries. ZFT is among them.
So they're terrorists?
Well, not in a conventional sense. They traffic not in drugs or weapons, but in scientific progress.
Meaning what?
Meaning what happened on Flight 627. Or what happened to Agent Loeb. These may have been simply proof that a scientific theory, an experiment, worked.
So that thing we found in Loeb could be one of those experiments. Do you think that Jones will tell us how to remove it?
He might, if we were allowed to see him. German authorities have refused us access.
What?
They're not giving the U.S. access.
And he's being kept in Frankfurt?
Yeah.
I may be able to get in.
You got superpowers you aren't telling me about?
Maybe.
You're not really going to Germany?
Yeah, I'm really going.
Let me save you the trip, Dunham. You're not getting in.
We don't know each other well enough for you to say something like that to me. And I don't see any other option here, do you, sir? Loeb's your friend. And I promised his wife.
And again, we see that Olivia Dunham, who is trying to help the victim here. And, although the victim is unconscious, his wife is somebody that she can kind of relate to. And, her whole point of she promised his wife, and she wants to do what she can to help him out. And I love the exchange between her and Broyles when she's like, you don't know me well enough. And I think it's just a little bit of a reminder that they both have pasts and histories that we haven't really explored, you know, the whole way yet. You know, there's more information. You know, they're still filling each other out, and I think that that's kind of important to remember, because I know it's, you know, episode 7, and we're almost at a halfway point, but I think it's still kind of important that, you know, that we realize that there's still going to be some trust issues. There's still going to be some information that is not being passed back and forth. And, you know, I just really like the exchange, because it did the very first time I saw this episode, I thought, man, that was kind of abrupt. You know, I couldn't believe that she would say something like that. But, you know, the more I thought about it, and as I do the episode breakdowns, it does fit, you know. Anyway, the next clip is of Olivia landing, and she meets a gentleman who is, you know, obviously a past acquaintance of hers. And everybody here will know him as the guy that played, well, right now he's playing on Revolution. I think that he's probably more widely known as what's her face's dad in the Twilight movies. And it was always a shame that, I mean, it seems like such a solid actor, and he was the only thing I really liked in the Twilight films, other than the big, you know, fight scene at the end of the last one. But you know, he does a pretty good job on Revolution, and I just wanted to point out that, you know, it's kind of nice to go back through here and see people that have made a bit of a mark, especially in the sci-fi world of things. Billy Burke is his name. I'm sorry. I'm sitting here trying to look for him while I'm talking. I thought I had a bookmark, but I don't. You know, I try to find it's nice to go back when you watch all these shows, any show, and you see people that, even if they only had small parts, but later on kind of broke out on their own to make a mark in a science fiction type show, especially. I mean, it's good to see everybody doing, you know, working toward, you know, bigger goals anyway, but especially when you see somebody that really connects to sci-fi and be like, hey, yeah, you know, that guy's there. And it's just kind of a fun little game. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking now.
I'm not sure I can help you.
You said you have contacts at the prison.
I'm in the Bundestag. I have contacts everywhere. But you jumped on a plane so fast, I didn't have time to check anything out.
Well, what did you find?
I know the warden. He wouldn't agree to anything. He didn't want me to show up.
So what do we do?
Show up.
Tenacious as always. What can I do for you, Lucas?
Olivia Dunham. This is Johan Lennox.
Thank you for seeing us.
You want time with a prisoner?
David Robert Jones.
This will be a problem.
I'm sure we can work something out.
I'm sorry.
Es gibt da bestimmt Dinge, die Sie gebrauchen können. Und ich wäre bereit, über diese Dinge zu reden.
Mit dem, was ich brauche, können Sie mir nicht helfen. Your friend wants to be persuasive.
Mr. Lennox, you have your reasons why you won't allow access to your prisoners. But this is very important to me. I would be willing to sign anything. Etwas, das beispielsweise beweist, dass ich nicht hier war.
I like her.
You have good taste.
Even if I were to give the okay, Mr. Jones talks to no one.
I have reason to believe he will talk to me. If I write him a message, will you give it to him?
Now, Robert David Jones does get the message and does agree to see Olivia. And Robert David Jones is David Bowie's real name, for those of you that didn't know, and I thought that was kind of neat. I also want to point out that when the plane very first lands and Olivia's walking through the airport at the beginning of the of the last clip. That is when we see the Observer, and I do have a screenshot, so I will be putting that up when I put the podcast up. Again, this is a game I love playing, Spot the Observer. Basically, Robert David Jones agrees to see her and agrees to answer questions, but she has to answer a question for him from somebody that that lives in the States, and we're going to get to that here in a second. And so they're trying to track down, you know, this person and figure out what's what. But in the meantime, the next clip I have is, and this is, again, this is one of my favorite moments in season one, especially. But you have Broyles, who's trying to have a conversation with Walter, and Walter starts going on about fruit cocktail. And Broyles is worried because his buddy's laying on a bed, you know, there in the lab dying. And so he approaches, you know, he decides that he's going to go and talk to Peter and find out what's what. And I just love the fact that, you know, I love this next exchange. I love the fact that Peter is just kind of like saying, hey, you know, you're the one who stuck me here. I don't know what it is you thought, you know, what superpower it is you thought that I had that I can, you know, see inside Walter's mind.
We need to discuss your father.
Is it the fruit cocktail thing again?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's been doing that recently. He gets obsessed about certain foods. It's weird.
We need him to focus.
To focus? Mr. Broyles, two-thirds of the time my father's not even lucid. And in those rare and unpredictable moments of clarity, he rambles on about the foods and beverages that he missed while he was incarcerated in a mental institution for the better part of the last 2 decades. To say that he's not focused is to say that he's a biped. Which is to say, you're absolutely right. He's not focused. And also, it's not going to change anytime too soon. I'm his son. I'm not a puppeteer. I don't have a remote control. There's no master switch I can flick and turn him into the man I wish had raised me, or even somebody I don't have to babysit every day. I guess I've had that on my mind for a while.
Apparently. Broyles.
It's Charlie Francis. I understand I'm not at a clearance level, but I have something for you.
What is it?
Local connection to the ZFT.
Speak to me.
We analyzed the document Lo brought back from Frankfurt. We figured out
each line corresponds to an FBI case file and an ID number for the agent or agents assigned to it. Every one of them originating from this field office.
Another mole in this office? And you think what? John Scotty was working the ZFT?
Maybe. Maybe not.
Whoever did this needed upper-level security clearance, access to the FBI mainframe.
You said local connection.
Yeah, one of the lines is a phone number registered to a Joseph Smith, and we have him tied.
Yeah, I know Joseph Smith.
Loeb was briefing me on him when he collapsed.
You got an address?
Hold on.
4331 Broad Street, Saugus.
4331 Broad Street. I'll call you back.
This is Broyles. I want a SWAT team surrounding Joseph Smith. He's at 4331 Broad Street in Saugus, and I want this radio silent.
So it's right after this that Olivia calls Peter and says they need to find Mr. Smith, and I'm still laughing over Jones and Smith. But, you know, she's like, you know, she starts giving him some information, and he says, oh, he lives here because he heard the phone call that Broyles had. And she's like, you know, you can't let them kill him. Because, you know, I need him to answer these questions so that, you know, I can, you know, get the information I need from Mr. Jones. So Peter is driving like a crazy man to the person's address, and he's trying to get in there to talk to somebody to tell them, you know, don't shoot him or whatever. But unfortunately, by the time he gets there, or right after he gets there, Mr. Smith takes a bullet to the head.
What are you doing here?
I just got off the phone with Olivia. She's headed back to the airport. Turns out Mr. Jones would only help us if he could talk to Mr. Smith. The same Mr. Smith that your people just killed.
You're kidding me.
That's the first serious thing I've said all day. Hello?
Peter, hey, it's Astrid. Your father wanted me to inform you that there is fluid accumulating in Agent Loeb's lungs.
Tell him we need help quickly.
He says we need help quickly.
Insert this into his IV. Let me talk to him. Hello, Peter. This is me, your father, Walter Bishop.
Thank you, Walter. I know who you are.
Excellent. We need to talk to that man, Smith, right away. He may be our best chance to save Agent Loeb's life.
I know that, but he's dead. He was shot. We're out of luck.
Does he still have his head? Is it still attached to his body?
Only you would ask that question seriously. Yes, he still has a head.
Splendid. Then perhaps in this case, death is simply an inconvenience. Bring him in and hurry.
So Peter does just that. He brings, you know, Mr. Smith back to the lab. He's in a body bag. And Walter unzips the bag, and this is the exchange that they have.
He's been shot in the head.
Is that a problem?
Yes, that's a problem. Of course it's a problem. A bullet in the head would normally indicate significant brain trauma.
Well, it would also indicate that he's dead, but you didn't seem to have a problem with that.
This procedure is not like removing tonsils.
I've never had a conversation with a dead guy before. Forgive me if I don't know the rules.
Is this going to work or not?
I'll need to alter the procedure. And I'm not making any promises.
86 degrees, Dr. Bishop.
Good, almost there. Let me know when it's exactly 84.5 blue. Human brain is like a computer. Brain just needs electricity to function, which the body ceases to produce upon death, which is why we're keeping his body cool to retard degeneration.
Walter goes on to explain the procedure a little bit, and you know, he delves back into the past and some of the experiments that he has done for the government. And of course, when he's discussing this one, I think he's discussing a case that all of us are fairly familiar with.
In 1975, the FBI asked me to use this procedure. Someone had been murdered. I don't recall his name. James, I believe, or Jimmy. They wanted to identify his assassin. Union leader, I think.
Jimmy Hoffa.
Yes. The trouble was he had a shockingly low electrosensitivity. When I turned on the machine, it instantly fried his brain like an egg. Everyone has a unique tolerance to electrical stimulation. Mine, for instance, is remarkably high. Yours, Peter, unusually low. As for our friend here, we don't know. Too little current, and it won't work. Too much, and we will overcook his brain. So I
You used to do this to me. You would attach wires to car batteries, and then you would shock me.
Yes, I was accumulating data.
No, you were experimenting on me.
Son, we're ready. First, we must test if this will register any brain activity, and this will indicate if he's transmitting any thoughts to you. Since he's dead, Peter, you'll obviously have to be his ears and mouth. Eventually, we'll connect this to your head. Okay, dear, we're ready. Turn it on. Try 200 microvolts.
In the meantime, Olivia gets in to see Robert Jones, and she's explained that she only has a certain amount of time she's allowed to visit him, you know, as we heard earlier. And so she's trying to explain to him, or telling him how the whole thing's going to work. Because in the meantime, Peter has contacted her, you know, said, hey, don't leave yet. You know, we think we can make this work. You know, we have the cutscenes between her having a discussion with him and, you know, Walter and Peter and Astrid trying to work on the dead guy to try to get the information from him.
What a pleasure this is.
We have your Mr. Smith in custody. You will not speak with him directly. You will ask me one question that you want answered. I will relay that question to an agent back in the States who will talk to Mr. Smith. I will then relay Mr. Smith's response to you. Then you will tell me how to save Agent Loeb. That is how it works.
You're very serious. Do you know that? Your friend's life hangs in the balance, is that it? And you want me to save him. I gather as much from your note.
Tell me something. Why not your freedom? Or extradition? You must realize that you have leverage here. And all you want is the answer to one question.
You make two assumptions, Miss Dunham, both incorrect. The first is that there is nothing more valuable than my freedom. The second is that I am responsible for the infection of Agent Loeb.
Now, David Robert Jones is played by Jared Harris, who, the more I see him in things, the more I appreciate his work. He also had a big part in Mad Men, and he has a recurring role on Fringe. And, you know, we'll see him a few more times, and I just really enjoy his acting style when he's especially, I mean, he, you know, with other people, he doesn't have many scenes, many intense scenes outside of playing Nick Stanatorf as Olivia Dunham. And when you are sitting there and you're watching this and watching the dialogue, and again, this is one of those things where it's like the sound editors, they need to get every award known to man. This show has the best freaking sound, the best dialogue of any series I've ever listened to. When you know, sometimes when you're listening to shows and dialogue and, you know, there's too much background noise or it's not clear, or, you know, they just do a very good job. I really appreciate that, because for as much action and as much science as there is in this show, an equal amount of this show is carried by the dialogue and the acting between two people. You know, the conversations, you know, that acting, not, you know, the inaction, inactive acting, I like to call it, the inactive acting. And I really enjoy the tension between Dunham and Jones. I mean, they really just kind of amp it up without really doing anything, just by having an exchange. And it's during these scenes where I think that, you know, Anna Torv, you can really appreciate her acting, because in her face, you can see, at least to me anyway, you can see like the pressure and the, you know, the fact that she has some authority, but because of the situation she's in, she can't really do much with that. So she's kind of always in conflict against doing what the right thing is and what she has to do to, you know, complete whatever mission she's on. Now, Robert David Jones is in prison, as we've established, but the name of the prison, and I might butcher this a little bit, it's Wissenschaft Prison, and it roughly translates to Science Prison, which I thought was a nice little Easter egg. Also, in the last episode, The Cure, there was the scene where Walter had taking the temperature of the victim, and he used what looked like a gigantic meat thermometer. He plunged into him. If you look at the thermometer, it had the initials ZTF, and that is the initials referring to the cell that is suspected of unleashing the parasite on everybody, including the agent. You know, we're not sure who else it was been released on, but anyway, I wanted to point that out. I'm going to try to do a little bit better with, I mean, sometimes there's hints to, you know, they try to have a hint for the next episode. And I don't want to give you the hint when I'm doing that breakdown, so I got to kind of go back. But sometimes the hints are just really not very good, or they're so obscure that it'd be kind of hard to see them, you know. And I've covered this a couple times. I mean, there's some of the things I'm like, I have no idea. Like the one when Olivia's in the train station, there's a picture of the cylinder from The Arrival on it. And it is just, I have no idea how somebody caught that. Oh my God, it was just so far in the background. And but like, this was something we were looking right at and had ZTF on it. I thought that was kind of funny. Anyway, next clip.
What if someone wanted information from the both of us? Do you see? Perhaps they've orchestrated all of this. What if you and I, both of us, at this very moment, being manipulated.
By who? And what would they want?
You've not been doing this very long, have you?
There are very few things in life that surprise me anymore, Miss Dunham. And yet, I confess, I am confused. If it is so urgent to save the life of your friend, why haven't we gotten on with it?
There's a couple things I want to touch on quickly, and then I'll move ahead with the story here. You know, Peter, you know, he knows now that his father has performed experiments on him. You know, this might have been the only one, but he knows that it's been done, and it makes him, you know, it just kind of adds to, the litany of things he's angry at Walter about. And in this case, it was actually worked out that happened. It actually worked out to the positive because he needs to hook the dead guy up to Peter, and Peter is supposed to be able to, read his mind or get his thoughts. You know, Robert David Jones, wants him to, gives him the question to ask, and they're trying to do that. And it's just not, doesn't seem to be working. And Olivia's running out of time, and panic sets in because they're going to make her leave the cell, and she's trying to find out the information. And it's very, very tense few minutes here as they go back and forth trying to figure out what to do.
Hello?
Okay, we're trying again.
3, 2, 1, go.
Where does the gentleman live? Do you hear anything?
I'm going to have to increase the voltage. I'm sorry, son. 3, 2, 1, go.
Where does the gentleman live?
Zeit ist um, Sie müssen jetzt gehen.
Ich brauche noch 6 Sekunden.
Nein, Sie müssen jetzt gehen. Sie haben keine Zeit mehr.
Astrid, I need the answer now.
Agent Dunham, it's not working.
I need paper. Paper, give me some paper. Quick, quick, I see something.
Wait, hold on.
Untie my hand. Quickly.
What is that?
I have no idea.
Now, Peter and Walter are kind of, you know, Peter especially is panicking because he's trying to help Olivia. That's why he agreed to this. That's why he's letting his dad put this thing on his head and this and that and the other. And he ends up with a bunch of straight lines and they can't figure it out. And Walter says, well, maybe that part of his brain was damaged. That basically, to simplify it, he goes into a longer explanation, but he can't to make horizontal lines. So it pops into Peter what it is. He ends up filling it out. They know what it is. And they are actually back into prison. They have Olivia almost the entire way out of the cell door. And she's kind of going kicking and screaming the whole way because she's trying to make this happen. She wants to get this information. And they get the information to her just in time.
Little Hill.
Little Hill?
Little Hill!
3 parts mebendazole, 2 parts thermophilic hydrolase. A syringe directly into the parasite.
Astrid, write this down. 3 parts mebendazole, 2 parts thermophilic hydrolase. A syringe directly into the parasite.
Now, of course, the fringe team saves Mitchell because, well, they're them, okay? The next clip I have is of him in the hospital and Broyles trying to have a conversation, see if he can find out any other information about how these groups are the pattern or whoever is getting the information, right? At this point, when I was watching this show, I'm still not convinced this is a pattern thing. I'm not quite sure what's going on. I just know that there is a bigger organization at work, and they obviously have enough power and enough people to infiltrate the FBI, and they have enough money to be able to set up these labs and trying to make these crazy things. And, and they have enough money to keep it scattered around enough that it's not like one big building where they can, you know, do whatever they do. They're not able to be found, you know? Broyles obviously is concerned, you know, because, you know, how are they getting the information that, the FBI, you know, only the FBI should know. They got in everybody around him, you know, he has known and trusted. You know, they had, you know, the problem with Olivia's former partner, John Scott, but, you know, he's been dead a while now. So how are they getting the information? And that is kind of the big question for the episode, is how is all this happening?
Mitchell, I understand that you're feeling far from 100%. But while you were unconscious, we made a discovery that an organization with connections to the pattern may have someone working with us on the inside.
John Scott.
That was our first thought. but it would have needed to have higher clearance than Scott was afforded. We thought that perhaps you were targeted because you might have discovered who that person was.
Scott's the only one I know of. You're making me paranoid.
All I want to do is make you better. I'll see you in the morning. Hey, Sam.
Sir. How is he?
He's good. The doctor here removed that thing from his chest. Walter made sure he saved it for him.
I bet he did. But what about answers? The question Jones asked Smith. And the response he got, Little Hill? We know that Agent Loeb was infected, but we don't know by whom. Jones says it wasn't him. We don't know anything.
You have a problem, Agent Dunham. You're not easily satisfied. You want everything and you want it now. In your mind, somehow a small victory is no victory. What you did was save a man's life, but that doesn't land for you.
Sir,
I would tell you to snap the hell out of it. Stop whining about what you can't know, can't control, can't change. I would tell you to get some sleep while you can, because tomorrow we'll do this all over again, and guess what? You'll have a million new answers and a million and one new questions. I would tell you those things, but I won't. Because your dissatisfaction is what makes you so damn good. Someone I'm proud to say I work with.
Thank you.
Now go get some sleep while you can.
And again, this is something that I really enjoy about this show is, this especially happens with Broyles and Olivia. And I like the way that at some point in time, you know, during the first couple of acts, they'll have something happen in their relationship, you know, with some kind of verbal exchange. And, you know, then usually by the end, you know, the way that Broyles is written, the way that he explains himself or the exchange that he has with Olivia at the end lets him know it's I'm not saying he's apologizing. I'm saying that it lends to the fact that the exchange they had earlier, you know, he imparts some sort of information or it shows that he has learned from that and realizes that maybe he's not being, you know, maybe like when she says in this case, you know, you don't know me that well. This is his way of saying, you know, yeah, I do. You know, I know the kind of person you are. It's not just the kind of agent you are. It's the kind of person you are. You know, the last episode, the episode before that, you know, we've learned about her passion and how she gets, you know, mixed up in these cases and how it's what drives her. And he's learned that. And now he is learning that, you know, he knows enough about her that this is a chance for her to learn as well. You know, during this exchange, you know, he's saying, I know that you are driven by this. I know that you want answers to the questions. And I know that is one of the reasons that you don't sleep at night, because you're thinking about these things. You want to know everything and you want to know it now. You're hungry for that knowledge. And he's saying to her, see, I do know you. You know, I do know the kind of person that you are. And I do know you well enough to know that you're not going to give up. And it's his way of kind of telling her that information without saying, you know what, you're full of crap. I do know you, you know, stop that, stop acting out or whatever, you know. And I just love the way that they do that. And these two characters just have such great rapport, I think, you know, on the screen when they're together. And I think that the way that they're written, you know, considering in the very first episode they hated one another, they have done a great job growing this relationship between the two of them and making it very organic how they have come to respect one another. Now I have one final clip, and this is of the Loebs. You know, they're reunited. You know, he's recovering and she's happy to have him back. And we have this one final clip.
They're gone.
So, did it work? What we did?
Yes. It led them back to Mr. Jones.
Did he ask the question? Did we get the answer?
Little Hill.
So that ending was quite the bombshell for me the very first time I watched this. The fact that these two are in on it. I don't know what it is, but I just know that they're a part of it. And they and the guy actually risked his life in order to find out whatever information that he wanted to find out. And I don't know what Little Hill is, but I can't wait to find out. It was funny because I did a I watched this for the third time because I had to pull the audio. And again, this is part of the problem with doing the episode breakdowns is the fact that Fringe, I find Fringe the most difficult one to pull audio from because I can't, even when I make notes, it doesn't really work out for me. I have to go back and basically rewatch the entire episode again. And I'm not complaining, you know, it's a time suck, but I mean, I enjoy watching it again. But I got to the end of it and I just like the way she whispers Little Hill in his ear. And so it was funny because I went on Twitter and I tweeted at Little Hill with the hashtag Fringe to see if I get any responses. And I haven't as of yet. But I like the little things like that, that, you know, and you can go to Twitter and do a search for Fringe and find some of the more hardcore Fringe followers. And I find it, they kind of get it, you know. And anyway, a good solid episode that not only did we have plenty of character development, we had plenty of Walter, we had plenty of Peter, we got to see some great acting by the entire cast. But you had a good story too. The whole deal with the whole deal with there being a bigger plot and us actually seeing part of that, you know. Because up until now, yeah, we've heard about the pattern. There's been little bits and pieces, but nothing has started to coalesce. And it's not, I'm not saying it's that we're not any more in the dark now than we were at the beginning of the episode, but you're understanding that there's more people involved, and we're finding that there's other people in the FBI involved, and that there's more than just a single person or a single cell involved. It's kind of like, you know, I mean, Jones isn't necessarily with these people, but we know that they are smaller parts of a whole, and it's kind of starting to make a little bit of sense. Next time, the episode will be The Equation. Doesn't have the best story, but you have a lot of Walter in it, and Walter goes back into the asylum to try to find out some information. But you have a lot of Walter, a lot of fantastic acting, and a real solid connection between him and Peter. They do a very good job of expressing themselves, and we get to see Peter do a little bit of I think his true feelings for Walter come out, and we get to see him kind of fight for his dad. And I just all around good episode because of that. That's it for the episode. If any feedback is appreciated, as always, you can go to scifiday.com and find out all the ways to reach me and send me feedback. And that's it. Well, that is the show, folks. As always, you can reach me at scifidig@gmail.com. All sorts of feedback is welcome. I've gotten a lot of feedback over the Fringe season finale, a lot of emails and things like that. And although I've responded to them a little bit, I will be revisiting all these when I do the finale. And hopefully some of the folks out there that have commented on the finale will do a rewatch, because that's part of the problem with Fringe. I think it gets kind of complex, and without doing a rewatch, it's kind of hard for me to try to connect all the dots. And I even have people now that are texting me about episode, you know, something in the third season or the end of the second season. I haven't rewatched that far yet, and I can't remember all the details. And it isn't until I sit down to rewatch them that I start to remember all the details. And with Fringe, it's a little more complicated than, like I said, Supernatural. I have to sit down and actually rewatch it a second time and jump around in order to pull the audio. But at any rate, there's that. So I will talk to everybody next time. Keep the feedback coming. This is Aaron from the Sci-Fi Dig Podcast. Over and out.